So, well, again, welcome to to Inside Higher Ed and to higher education. And I was talking to one of my colleagues this morning and thinking there's always been a little bit of, not necessarily tension, but the military and academia haven't always been aligned. You know, you've had fights over ROTC and stuff in certain places. How did higher ed look to you as you entered it? Did it look like is it a very different animal from what you've been used to?
You know, I've been asked that question a lot, and I think the answer will surprise a lot of folks, and that no, it's not, because it's really about dealing with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people believe that in the military, as a senior commander, you know, you tell people what to do and they automatically do it. And of course, that's not the case. It's like anywhere else, it's a function of leadership and management. So my last job, I was in charge of all U.S. Special Operations, so that's almost 70,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were spread out across many times 90 different countries around the world. And so, and I had a small university, the Special Operations University, so we actually had faculty and we mm-hmm. had to have them accredited. I had a small medical school where we, you know, taught corpsmen and medics and tactical or combat surgeons. So aspects of this were actually pretty familiar with me. And then in terms of things like the budget, I had a $10 billion budget. So I worked a lot of times on Capitol Hill, and so now mm-hmm. I'm working at the Capitol. So all these things were transferable, and for me the transition was actually pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea I like about higher ed is the fact that certainly as the chancellor, I'm in a position, you know, to help the young men and women, and nowadays, of course, the students that are non-traditional, a little bit older, but help them as they're moving forward in life. And that's kind of what the military was all
mm-hmm.
about, too.
Mm-hmm. So what has been, I mean, you're relatively new in the position, but so what has surprised you so far? Anything?
Yeah, you know, nothing has really surprised mm-hmm. me. What I have found interesting mm-hmm. is the breadth of the things that I deal with as the chancellor.
Sure.
I guess I came in, and again, not necessarily surprised, but I knew my focus would be on higher education, it would be on clinical care, because of course a large
sure.
part of the system
yep.
is the medical aspect of it, and research. But I didn't really have full appreciation for oil and gas, for example. We've got 2.1 million acres out in West Texas mm-hmm. That is an important part of our revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
Real estate, we have real estate ventures around the state, and that's necessary, again, for a little bit of how we do business. And then this discussion on higher ed. You know, I jumped right into the legislative session, which actually turned out to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little concerned going into it that I was going to jump into the deep end of the pool very early on. The good news is I do know how to swim. this has given me an advantage because I've had an opportunity to meet the legislators. I've had an opportunity to really deep dive on a lot of the tough issues.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, you know, we're making some good progress mm-hmm. In the state in terms of our relationship with the legislature. So I guess it's the breadth of the things that the chancellor deals with that is different than what a president
Absolutely.
Would deal with.
You would have it would be a very different thing at a campus.
Exactly right. But that's the part I find absolutely fascinating.
Let alone the diversity among the institutions.
Correct.
And down the valley and Austin and.
Well, of course, the great things. Well, I know your readers and listeners are focused on higher ed. Of course, in the medical aspect of what we do
sure.
with MD Anderson and Southwestern, and we've got two new medical schools starting.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very large part of my portfolio and a part I find, you know, mm-hmm. Very exciting.
Right. Well, and down in the valley, the sort of, I mean, you're in the unusual position these days of sort of really building something.
We are.
To talk a little bit about sort of how you're finding that, and is that something, have you had a comparable experience doing something in something like that?
Well, absolutely. So the idea of kind of, you know, starting up University of Texas at the Rio Grande Valley, frankly, is one of the reasons I took the job. I saw a lot of opportunity. I'm from San Antonio. Spent a lot of time in South Texas, and I have an affinity for the great folks in South Texas. And to understand what a great university can do in South Texas with a medical school, this is going to fundamentally change the nature of how things are done in South Texas. And it's going to change the lives of, you know, thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people over time. Because you will have these young kids that are first generation going to school, and I had an opportunity to go visit them. It was my very first visit. And I wanted to make it my first visit for a number of reasons. One, it was a little bit symbolic that I do care about what's going on down in UTRGV. This is incredibly important to me. But it was also phenomenally inspiring, sitting around a table like this with the students, and I think just about every one of them were first generation. going to college, and you realize that it changed the trajectory of their lives and their kids' lives and their kids' lives and, you know, and generations to come. So this is the exciting thing about having an opportunity to do something that.
When you look at the public university systems are under some, I think, tension now. You've had, and I don't know how much you've caught up on recent higher ed history, but sure. We've had a bunch of flagships in various states think about looking at leaving right. their system and looking right. for independence, and so you've got in Austin, one of the premier public research right. universities in the country, and you've got this sort of new set of institutions or reconfigured set of institutions down in the valley focused on almost completely first generation and first time students. Do you see issues, especially, and I don't know how the budget's looking, I wouldn't ask you about that as well, but in an era of at least constrained resources, which it seems like we're just in, do you envision difficulty allocating among the different priorities, how and the very different missions that the different institutions are trying to serve? Do you see effort to try to do you think that's a competition and a process that's going to work smoothly?
Yeah, absolutely. I do see it as a competition that will work smoothly, but I'm not sure I would characterize it as a competition. Mm-hmm. I really do feel that the University of Texas system is a mutually supporting system, mm-hmm. and this is really what I hope to be able to shape as I go forward in terms of recognizing that the University of Texas at Austin is our flagship program. It is always going to be our flagship academic institution. Constitutionally, it is our flagship program, which means that through the available university fund, they are going to always get the bulk of the resources coming out of our West Texas lands. Having said that, what I'm finding is that each one of the universities is beginning to understand that it has, you know, a unique niche in this constellation that is the University of Texas system. For example, if you go to UT Arlington, President Carbari there has kind of defined it as an urban research university, and I think this is a great way to take a look at it. He's in the metroplex that is Fort Worth, Dallas, Arlington, one of the largest metroplexes in the United States. So now what they're focused on is, you know, architecture students and who's going to work on sewer systems and do we need a better nursing program, things that are focused on the metroplex. You look at UT Dallas, it's an engineering school. UTRGV is going to be a regional campus, as is East Texas and UT Tyler. So I think each one of them has a unique area of expertise. San Antonio focused on cyber. UT El Paso, again, and San Antonio, very heavily Hispanic. These are great attributes that I think can contribute to the overall system. So when I look at it as a mutually supporting system, by that I mean, you know, we ought to see, you know, what can Tyler do to help UT Permian Basin? What is the cyber aspect of UT San Antonio? What can it do to help UT Austin? How does MD Anderson support Southwestern? And we've got to look at opportunities to ensure that the strengths of each one of the universities and the differences of each one of the universities are in fact things that are going to make us better, mm-hmm. and not draw down from our overall, you know, capability.
Mm-hmm. And again, I realize it's early, but how are you sort of judging the role of the system in supporting the line between supporting and intruding on the campuses?
Right, absolutely.
How do you look at that?
Well, again, this is part of my military experience, and again, it may surprise some of your listeners, your readers, but in the military, you know, one of the things they always teach is, you know, the pyramid is kind of upside down. You're responsible to the folks below you. So when I was in a leadership position in my last job as the commander of Special Operations Command, or in the job before that, or the one before that, you learn that your job really as the commander is to make the subordinate commands successful. And you do that by giving them the latitude to do their job. You have to hold them accountable, you have to give them the resources they need to do the job, but you also have to give them the latitude, you have to give them the distance. At the same time, my job, my responsibility is to develop a strategic plan, to kind of shape the strategic direction that the entire system will move. So we're going to find out what are the core competencies of the system, things that I think are important that bring value to all the rest of the institutions. Mm-hmm. Those things we're going to do exceedingly well. We're also going to find some things that we don't do well, mm-hmm. and we're going to divest ourselves of those areas so that, again, we're not overly intruding, to use your word, on the institutions. Mm-hmm. But recognizing we have an oversight responsibility, We have a, again, we have a responsibility to build a strategic plan that moves all of the institutions forward, and that is my responsibility. Mm-hmm.
There has been, again, sort of, and Texas has been one of the places where there's been a push to turn more institutions into research institutions.
Right.
And do you envision, and I don't know whether you've sort of come up against it yet, but do you envision having to say no to institutional, because I guess in terms of institutional, there's a lot of institutions out there,
right,
that want to move up, however that's defined in their, do you think that it, within a system, some of it is about sort of coordinating and maybe
it is
sort of, so how do you look at that set of
issues? We have one tier one research university, which is the University of Texas at Austin. We have four emerging, so we've got El Paso, San Antonio, Arlington, and Dallas.
Right.
That are emerging research institutions, and no, I don't see any limitations. Mm-hmm. If all of them could be research institutions, I think that would be a good thing. They're not all going to be research institutions because that's not the way they're designed. Again, when you take a look at Tyler or UTRGV, they're going to be focused on regional issues as opposed to being research institutions. Of course, there's a limited amount of research dollars both within the state and within the federal government. So what
increasingly, the federal government.
Yeah. So what I don't want to do is, back to your point, I don't want to create competition where I don't need to create competition.
Right.
I want competition that will make us all better, not competition that's going to...
So maybe more focus on certain areas.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, if you take a look at UT San Antonio, they have this heavy emphasis right now on cybersecurity. Well, that's a great area of research for them. We have, three institutions across the system that are cancer institutes. I mean, those are areas where we need to kind of focus as well on the medical mm-hmm. side. So right now, one tier one, four emerging, and that's where we are mm-hmm. at this point in time. I don't see right now further opportunities to bring the other ones up, but I wouldn't discount it either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The phrase emerging, can they all emerge? Can they all?
No, because you have to have certain criteria in order to be an emerging research university.
No, but I mean, can all the, put it this way, I guess what I mean is, can all the emerging ones make the jump? Do you have a sense?
Remains to be seen. Yeah. And I would say, intuitively, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
But being an emerging research university in and of itself is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It means they have set certain standards and they have certain thresholds they have to meet in terms of research funding, the size of the university, the areas they actually do their research in, and all of that is good, even if they never become a tier one research mm-hmm. university. So I like the idea that they are at least attempting to move up. But no, I don't foresee them all mm-hmm. becoming tier one mm-hmm. research university.
So, but this is an interesting time in higher ed, a lot of discussion about new emergent kinds of education. So that's probably relatively new terrain for you, but so what do you make of the all the discussion about the role of technology, about competency-based, some of the issues that are really on the technology side?
So taking a look at this Institute for Transformational Learning, which is we're investing a fair amount of money into mm-hmm. figuring out how do we, in fact, do transformational learning across the system. We're going to focus initially on South Texas, because there's just not only the demographics, but there's some unique aspects of South Texas that are going to allow us to kind of beta test this idea of the transformational learning. And we're pretty excited about it, and specifically kind of in the medical area. But I really do think that we're on the cusp of a tectonic shift in how we do learning. If you'd asked me this a year ago or 5 years ago, I'd said, well, I'm not sure. There's a lot of hype about the technology, and I think we've taken a hard look at MOOCs, and there's clearly MOOCs bring education to the masses. We have a lot of blended programs within the University of Texas system, and most of those do very, very well. You take a look at the students that enjoy learning online, but you still have to have some classroom time, particularly if you're going to be in a research environment or an engineering environment where you have to have hands-on. So we recognize there's a blended aspect of this. But what our ITL, our Institute for Transformational Learning, is doing is taking a hard look at, tell me what the student experience needs to look like. What do the students of today, and what do we think the students of tomorrow are going to need in order to really learn well, learn quickly, learn at a rate that makes sense to them. So this gets back to the competency-based education. Yeah, if you can learn faster than another person, why would I hold you up in a classroom and wait till the end of the semester before we allow you to progress forward? And so we're, you know, the things I've seen that ITL is doing, that this Institute for Transformational Learning is doing, if they pan out, and again, I will caveat that a little bit, but we're going to know pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And I think within the next year, we're going to be able to determine whether or not this whole concept of competency-based education, at least as we are envisioning it, has some significance for the future. Mm-hmm. My gut instinct tells me it absolutely does. My number two son, who has got his PhD in theoretical physics, he learns entirely different mm-hmm. than my other kids did. Uh-huh. He didn't need to go to a classroom. He was the type of young man, he'd pick up a book, read it, and know the material like that. Mm-hmm. You know, the kind of kid that you really right. just hate in class. Yeah. And he did very, very well. Mm-hmm. He would have breezed through in 18 months mm-hmm. because that's the way he right. learns. So why would we not put other students in a position where they could do the same thing?
Let me ask, but on that point, so would, I assume he stayed, he did the whole 4 years, right?
Or were the 18, well, in other words, he went through graduated from Notre Dame with a bachelor's and then a master's in EE, and then went and got his PhD in physics.
Right, but I guess the larger point about that is time... I mean, a lot of people don't want to finish in 18 months.
Right, of course.
So how do you wrestle with, because there is this, we're entering this era, I think, where fast is seen as better, or at least,
it's a great question, and I don't necessarily see fast as
right.
better. So let me.
But you want the opportunity of
absolutely. I mean, the thing about going to college, as you well know, is it is about the experience. You know, the young men and women, particularly when they come in at 18, 19 years old, by the time they get out 4 years later, 5 years, 6 years later, they are different people. And that is an experience that is incredibly important to the citizenry of the United States. And so we don't want to put them in a position where it's just about creating, right. you know, product line.
That's getting the them last into the workforce thing. As
That's
soon
absolutely
as possible.
The last thing we want to do is create a product line. Right. We want a student that comes out who has leadership skills. We want a student who has really got the whole package in terms of understanding the importance of the cultures they're going to be dealing with. Because I've told folks, look, if you're an engineer, if you think you can be an engineer in today's environment without understanding, you know, the Arab culture or the cultures around the world, you're mistaken. You need to have some understanding of basic philosophy and the humanities. I mean, these are important mm-hmm. aspects, I think, to the whole person. Mm-hmm. So you're right. We don't want to rush it. But at the same time, what we can do is we can provide more opportunities by having this transformational learning. So the students coming through can, you know, in some cases, the problem we run into is, well, if you want to be an electrical engineer, guess what? Here's what your path looks like to getting your degree. And there's not a whole lot of variation in that path. Mm-hmm. Would be great to have a little bit more variation so they could take more classes in the humanities, you know, more classes in the arts and sciences outside. I mean, mm-hmm. this would be great. And we can do that through competency-based right. education, I think.
Let's go back to the state. What has, in terms of the session and what you sort of your deep dive into, mm-hmm. into what are the issues that, how has the session gone and what are the issues that sort of have... captured the discussion so far?
Yeah, the sessions, you know, up till now uh-huh. has gone very, very well. And we're down to about 40 days left, I think, and so there's, you know, a lot can change in the last 40 days. But all of the chancellors of the UT system, or of the Texas systems mm-hmm. came in, and we really had a very kind of consolidated front. We had a couple of issues that we all needed to address. The tuition revenue bonds, which we haven't had since 2006. So this allows us, if it passes, will allow the state to buy the debt for essentially an engineering building in the case of UT, the UT system, on every campus that we have. So that's huge for us. We looked at the formula funding. Formula funding has been pretty flat for us for a long time. We were looking for a little bump in formula funding, and it looks like that will happen. We're looking at issues local to the state of Texas, but we have this thing called the Hazelwood exemption. And this allows veterans to be exempt from the cost of tuition and fees, which is a great veteran benefit, and we support it. However, the state has not been matching the funds. And so what happens is the institutions end up absorbing the cost of that, which disadvantages the other students that are coming in. So we're trying to find a position where we can continue to support Hazelwood, but where the state kicks in a little bit of resources so that the institutions aren't paying for it and driving costs up. Research is a big one for us. We know, based on the Texas Workforce Commission, that there's going to be a demand for another 88,000 engineers and computer scientists over the next 10 years. So we're trying to increase the number of STEM programs we've got, particularly in the engineering and computer science area. Well, that means more faculty. That means requirements for more research dollars to build laboratories, to do those sorts of things. And fortunately, again, the state is stepping up. I think probably one of the best discussions I had at one of the early hearings, one of the legislators said, you know, this is really a partnership between the state and higher education, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, we are their higher education. This is the, you know, we support the state of Texas. And so, frankly, across the board, the legislators have been very, very good. And for me, it's been wonderful to see how they work in the state of Texas. You know, these are citizen legislators. They know they have to return to their hometowns. But they also know they have 140 days to get bills passed. So they come in and they work hard. And they have a great dialogue with, you know, not just higher ed in our case and the Article 3 aspects of this, but they have dialogue with, you know, it's great to see our democracy at work mm-hmm. when you walk into the Capitol. And it works. And it works in the state of Texas. So it's, it's been fun to watch.
And is it, obviously things are always a little more fun and more easier to appreciate when there's money and you're
right.
not fighting over crumbs sort of.
Correct.
And so that and so is the budget outlook right now is
yeah. So the the state of Texas had a little bump in revenue, which I think has allowed the state to look a little bit more at higher education. Mm-hmm. But also Governor Abbott made his number two issue higher education. Mm-hmm. Number one issue was K-12,
right.
And the number two was higher ed.
Mm-hmm.
That sent a great signal.
Right.
And this is a governor that's very much interested in, mm-hmm. and recognizes the value of higher education in Texas. So, I think that permeated throughout the Capitol,
mm-hmm.
and people seem very interested mm-hmm. and very willing to work with us.
So the perfect segue to governors and public higher ed, your predecessor and the last 5 to 7 years have seen mm-hmm. a fair bit of tension over the
right.
over leadership, at particularly at the flagship, and how much of an issue of how concerned were you or how much reassurance did you get when you came in about sort of how your ability to manage the system and are you at all worried about political interference that some have alleged occurred over the last few years in terms of
Part of it is I recognize that my job as the chancellor is I'm the CEO of the University of Texas system, and I have a responsibility to the Board of Regents, who have a responsibility to the people of Texas. And, you know, I was raised in a chain of command, so I understand how that chain of command works. They have been terrific. It's been great working with the Board of Regents, actually. I think, you know, we just selected a president for the University of Texas at Austin, Dr. Greg Finves, yesterday with an 8-0 vote and only one abstention, which, again, I think signals a very strong desire for the Board of Regents to, you know, to move past the drama that's occurred over the last mm-hmm. Couple of years and set our sights on the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, and I'm not somebody that is easily pressured when it comes to making decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make the decisions that are best for the University of Texas system, and I will work with the board, and again, the members of the board, I have a great relationship with all of them, actually.
Mm-hmm.